those offenses are with you so that the council can hear that?
It's mostly low-level property crimes, including it used to be PFC and DFC trespass, which is no longer there, but it also includes drug crimes. And some of the trespasses, we've opened it up for some of the apartment areas where we've had specific problems. And then, of course, UUVs, car prowls, those sorts of crimes that are chronic livability, the sorts of crimes that people engaged in drug use and abuse use to support their habits.
So to be clear, for those listening, up to Project 57's implementation, those kinds of crimes were basically ticketed and released?
Yes.
Correct.
And so
That's correct.
We actually apprehend them, take them to jail, and they then enter the system.
Yes.
Great.
Chief, the thing I also wanted to talk about for just a minute was prostitution. Is that I consider that a serious problem, and there's a lot of neighborhoods in Portland where it's their dominant serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
With the expiration of the drug and prostitution-free zones, I would like to make sure that the city is engaged in finding the resources to deal with the prostitutes, not only with their drug habits, which that's part of the issue, but also getting them out of that particular occupation. One of the things that I've been doing is talking to the county about what are the programs that they have, and we're going to continue those discussions. But it seems like in the last 10 years, we've sort of, as a community, pulled back from that issue in terms of trying to get folks out of prostitution. Could you address that at all?
Well, I think that's accurate, and Kathleen Treb can probably talk a little bit about the fact that programs have ebbed and waned over the years in terms of getting people out of that lifestyle and that decision-making. But in the conversations yesterday, Ed Blackburn from Central City Concerns was talking about most of the women in treatment at one time or another in their life have used prostitution as a way to support their habits. So I think we have been getting to the problem through some of the drug treatment, but we need to be more deliberate about that. And we need to be able to get people in the door potentially through criminal sanctions or arrests, and then get them into the treatment system, which seems to be the most effective way to handle the issue. And then the question of accountability on the customers is one that, is a whole different issue to deal with. And we haven't
I would think having the ability to actually put them in jail, compensate their car, goes a long ways to correcting that behavior.
On some occasions,
because they're
yes.
not always drug-related kinds of
Rarely are they, right,
yeah,
drug-related.
Right.
So, but we used to have a program that put Johns through a school, and many cities have that, where they learn about consequences of their behavior, and that program is no longer in existence. And it may be something we want to explore as an alternative to sentencing with that group.
Do we have a recidivism tracking of Johns? Do we know who gets rearrested, who are chronic offenders?
I can tell you from my time in DVD, where we had the asset forfeiture side of it with the vehicles, we did see some chronic offenders, but the vast majority were one-time offenders.
See, that's my sense, is that the tool of actually being able to arrest them and take their vehicle would cure.
It definitely has an impact.
Yeah.
And trying to explain it at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Where were you last night, and where is the car?
In DVD, we required both parties that were on the title to come in to release the vehicle.
Holy smokes. Good.
Yeah, there's no treatment program that can match that.
That's pretty effective.
Okay. Ed, could you come up and just speak for a few minutes to some of the issues we've been talking about?
Morning.
Good morning.
Anything in particular?
Well, we just got through talking about prostitution,
right.
And the comments were made that a lot of the drug treatment programs are actually also dealing with folks who have used that as a...
The programs that see a lot of
heroin addiction, crack cocaine addiction, methamphetamine addiction. We'll see a lot of women who have been involved in prostitution. Obviously, not all women who are addicted to a substance are involved in prostitution. Because we do a lot of housing, I have ability to interact with a lot of our line staff, and we have active empowerment programs for our clients. I get to talk to a lot of our clients that have achieved sobriety. I don't know a single woman that was engaged in prostitution to support a drug habit that continued with prostitution once they got sober. I mean, I think that is very rare if it occurs. I do want to say this. There are issues around the trauma that occur to a person when they're engaged in a life of prostitution that have long-term impacts that can lead to relapse. And what I would encourage, I've got this concern about creating a lot of new programs in an era where a lot of nonprofits are really on the edge financially. This is something I'm beating out in the community about right now. But on the other hand, it is a need, and I think alcohol and drug providers who are seeing a lot of these women need to be engaged in that conversation. There may be another way of doing this through enhancement rather than creating new programs that may be more sustainable in the long run.
Good point.
Actually, I have Kathleen Treb, Department of Community Justice. All of the county's contracts with both outpatient and residential treatment demand that they have trauma-informed services in their services. So we've been really helping them get some training on different evidence-based practices to make sure they're dealing with the trauma when people are in treatment. But that does, I used to run, I think in the old days, CPA, and that used to be one of my contracts, and that's been gone for a long time. Then we gave money to LifeWorks, and that money is now, we're looking at it. There's a whole planning process right now for different prostitution alternatives, and Chiquita Rollins is heading that up with the county. So it would be nice if it could be together rather than two separate ones.
So how do we make that happen?
I'll be glad to talk to Chiquita and ask her what her plan is, and I've told Maria I will get back to her on that. And Joanne Fuller also said she'd work on it.
I talked to Joanne yesterday about this issue and she said they're very willing to work with us on this. So
Ed, one of the questions I have is kind of related to that, is I've kind of looked at the numbers and the breakout of how we're spending the existing $500,000. And I appreciate all the great work the county does, but I did notice that we're paying overhead costs. We're paying for other things that I'm a little unclear about. I'm wondering why the city couldn't, I mean, you guys do a great job. I mean, I've worked with Central City Concern now for 15 years on a variety of different. Actually, that's not true. Since 1979, when CHEERS first went into effect, from then till now, I've worked with Central City on a variety of different levels. And I just know that your program is effective and it works. What would be the logistical problem of us contracting directly with you, understanding we have limited dollars, understanding that every cent we have that we can get into treatment, where we get more people into treatment, we're now demonstrating has an impact on crime. And understanding that what I would like to see happen, and I know the mayor feels the same way, is to have this be a sustainable program, not one subject to cuts. In other words, if we implement this year because we have the resources, next year we get into a debate because we have a recession, that we preserve this because it's a really tight, well-run program that has results. Why couldn't we just contract through BHCD directly with you guys to provide these
services? Right now, the current contract is for, I believe, $564,000. And last year, there was a change in the way the contractual relationships went. So right now, actually, we do contract directly with BHCD for the service team and the rent subsidies that are getting these people off the streets. There are three residential beds through COTA right now that the county contracts directly with. So the county pays COTA, but there's a service team that includes the final decision on where people go based on a clinical decision, whether they go to residential treatment or some other form of treatment. But the vast majority of the money that goes to our services is right now through BHCD.
But if we just contracted directly with you, I mean, you do those screenings as part of your intake. Correct.
We do the screenings now.
Appropriate for people to do inpatient or outpatient or whatever.
Right now, a service team that meets, I think it's a biweekly basis, is going over each case, and they're making decisions about where people go. And it's a clinical decision, and the clinicians on that team do include Cascadia, but the other clinicians are from Central City Concern.
So we could amend the contract for whatever the amount is we end up amending with BHCD and you?
I would have to let Kathleen address. I don't even know what the amount of money is to COTA, or, but there is a stipulation in our contract that.
But I'm not talking about the existing money. I'm saying if we have new money, we could amend it for the new money to have a relationship directly with you, and then all of that money would go into services.
You could. I don't know. Yeah.
That's my question.
But it seemed like that's consistent, though, with BHCD's job of providing housing for homeless, that they then sort of tie these pieces together,
right.
Not just the folks who were arrested.
Exactly.
But all the housing money currently is contracted directly through BHCD. The only aspect is the three residential beds, and Kathleen, you might want to address that. So I'm saying, yes, theoretically you could, sure.
But we do have a sheet of paper here. I gave you a copy, Commissioner.
Yes.
I do want to straighten one thing out, though, that we do have the control over access. That's more important to us than who pays COTA right now,
and
from our perspective.
Part of why we did it that way with your service team earlier is you wanted data, and we already have – COTA already gives us data. Actually, all treatment programs do give us data on all of their intake and exit, how long people are in treatment, what their success rate was. And this allowed us to be able to give you the information you wanted.
Okay.
And we also can give it for people actually who you don't pay for, but we always have another maybe 10 people in treatment that you don't pay for.
I guess my interest is, and I appreciate these stats, mm-hmm. but my interest is making sure when we up the amount that we're buying 100% services, and that it's going directly to the provider to perform those services, and that the officers are aware, you know, X number amounts of beds are available, and we're getting as much bang of our buck as possible.
Yeah. But keep in mind, we would have infrastructure costs with collecting the data as well. I just, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
$6,000 for us.
I think those are things we can look as
yeah.
we put together a package for the fall bump.
Yes.
To make that work.
And we're doing that. My office is involved, yours is, and we're doing that.
I want folks at home to really understand what we're trying to do here is to take a program that's highly successful. It's really solves problems, not just displaces them, as Commissioner Leonard said, and apply it citywide because problems are citywide and the drug abuse is citywide. And we think that you can invest at one end or the other. When we invest at the back end, we're paying for jails, and when we invest the front end, we're actually investing in people and pulling them out of a very difficult time in their lives and solving a huge social issue along the way, too. So this is a much smarter way to do it, and I'm very pleased, Commissioner Leonard, with your leadership and the support of the council for this. It's a big step for the city.
I want to say one thing about this service team that's been put together. It includes the Police Bureau, Central Precinct. It's co-chaired by Sarah Westbrook and Sarah Goforth, who works for us. And it includes Cascadia and Join and some other partners around the table. And, Mayor, I think this is a great example of community policing, something that was envisioned a long time ago that's really, I think, working quite well. And it's been a very interesting experience for us. We appreciate the invitation to be at that table.
Thank you, folks.
I just wanted to make sure. I don't think I want to discuss it now, Mayor, but I just that you're doing a study right now of Hooper Detox, and obviously I think how that plays out, the council needs to be cognizant of what Central City is going to do and how we're going to play into it, and you know, given that that's yet another thing that we fund in one way or another with the county, we ought to have an answer for that, I think it's probably going to move, maybe not, but I just wanted to put that into the mix for this conversation as it goes along.
Could I also address one thing, too, is that I'd really hope that you look at that when you talk about treatment beds, as Lene reminded you, there are no treatment beds to buy in the community right now, none. Of course, you could help build a new facility. That would be one thing. But there really needs to be a continuum of services. Everybody doesn't need residential treatment. Everybody doesn't need what's called just outpatient treatment. One of the things we really are talking about is a day treatment model that's already in existence, and we could expand that and couple that with housing. So people could have a safe place to live if they needed it, but some people do have places to live. and they could have day treatment 3 to 4 times a day. Volunteers of America runs that program. So that's one of the models we're bringing forward to you because, again, there is not residential treatment. I called every residential treatment facility again on Thursday and met with them. There are no beds to buy right now in the Portland area or in Multnomah County.
So. Well, you may have heard that somewhat surprisingly, the city is acquiring another facility on Burnside that we envision doing those kinds of things with, which is, creates brand new opportunities to expand our services for this population.
Slight technical matter, we're helping the Housing Authority
acquire. Yes, excuse me. Thank you, Commissioners.
We've had real great success using what we call recovery mentors, working with people and having them live in a community with other people that are going through process of transformation, where they're learning how to build a positive peer support group, where they're learning to live in housing that can support that transformation, where they're getting employed, and where they're going through a real deep personal transformation, where they discover that the community is important to them, the wider community, and that they have something to offer. And it's all about getting them in a place where they have something to give back. And we don't know always who that's going to be, but we know from our experience everybody has that potential. So we're looking at adding different elements to this successful model we have developed so far and pretty excited about it.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much.
We have a sign-up sheet for this?
We did, and no one signed up.
Okay. This is a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I want to thank the mayor and Commissioner Leonard for their work on this. I think that addressing the waiting lists and lack of availability to services is absolutely key. I'd rather be taking care of an individual's challenges and getting them back to be a productive member of society than simply warehousing them on a very temporary basis and then matrixed out back onto the street. So thank you for your work on this. How about I?
Leonard?
Well, I'm sure Mayor Potter feels as I do that there's really hardly anything we can do that we could be more proud of that has such an impact on improving the livability of the community and giving people a chance to live good lives. And the partnership that we have developed with Central City and the county and the police bureau, I don't know if it's unique, but it's certainly unique in my experience. I don't know if it exists like this in other communities, but this is a very, this is what Portland is about, these kinds of thoughtful discussions and approaches to what have been traditionally, you know, throw people in jail and throw away the key kinds of approaches that we know does not work. So this is outstanding work. I really can't say enough about how much I appreciate Mayor Potter's support of this effort and the expansion of it and the willingness to try something different that potentially could have caused a lot of angst in the community. But I think because of this approach, for an example, we don't have a line of people here criticizing this action by the council today. And it's been a long time coming, and I think it's a great day in Portland. And I'm really proud of the council and the police bureau and everybody that's working with us on this. So thank you very much.
Stan.
Well, I'd like to thank Commissioner Leonard and particularly thank Mayor Potter for your thoughtful approach on the alcohol, the drug-free zones and the prostitution zones. Actually, 10 years ago, I was in a pretty lonely position. I was the only person on the council who raised any questions about the constitutionality of the drug-free zones, which were then later thrown out, and I wasn't happy to be right on that, but I feared correctly that they punish people without convicting them. And you know, but there's a good argument for the drug-free zones, which is that neighborhoods are overwhelmed with people who, you know, we don't actually lock them in and throw away the key. We don't lock them up at all. People would go and commit drug dealing offenses and come right back out. And so I understood both sides and just kept thinking that, you know, we can't settle for this choice of compromising civil rights versus just basic neighborhood livability. And that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years. And I don't think it's because there's people of bad will on either side. I've had my arguments with the DA's office from time to time, but I think everybody was trying to get to something better. And I think it's not perfect. It doesn't solve all the problems, but I think today is really much better. I think it's a proactive stretch, and I just wonder if had we been this aggressive 10 years ago in going after drug treatment and working with Central City Concern rather than going to court at least six times to defend a new version of the drug-free zone, maybe would have made a little more progress on actually solving the core problem. And I think that, I don't remember the percentages, but the vast majority of property crime in these areas is driven by the drug trade and people trying to get a fix, let alone the havoc that's wreaked on these people's lives and their families. And probably one of the most striking moments I've had in the last couple of years is when the major developer of property in the River District told me that the North Park blocks were much more safe after we opened up 8 Northwest 8th, which is a 200-unit alcohol and drug-free recovery facility for people who are really coming off the very, very bottom of the bottom rung. And he told me that he walked it, and once we started putting addicts who were in recovery into a clean, safe place in a nice, beautiful building, the park blocks were safer because those folks were keeping the park blocks clean. And this is the same area that had been subject to all these rules that weren't working in terms of the drug-free zone. So, Mayor Potter, I think this is a bold legacy as police commissioner, and it's the right move. So thank you. Aye.
Potter.
You know, I know that there's a lot of concern in the community about the sunsetting of those two ordinances, the drug-free and prostitution-free zones, but in addition to the issues that we've talked about today, there is also an issue about disparate enforcement. And I want folks to know that we're going to be working on that with the Police Bureau. In fact, Chief Sizer is implementing a number of internal systems and controls to ensure that officers are carrying out their duties in a fair and equitable manner. I remember years ago, in terms of using treatment versus suppression, I remember years ago Mike Schrunk saying that the best crime prevention tool is a empty jail bed. And he was right to a degree, is that what he meant is that as long as we have another jail bed, that we can always have a place to put people. But what this is saying is that the real key to success of preventing crime is also having empty treatment beds, where we have enough beds for everybody who needs one. And the message you heard today very clearly is that we don't begin to approach that. So with this program, what we hope is that we can eventually have the kind of system that focuses on eliminating the problem, which is drug abuse, and providing people with the tools to be successful human beings. The tools are out there. The programs are there. And it's really a choice for us to make, both as a policy makers for the city as well as citizens, is that we can invest in the front end in human beings or we can invest in the back end and make sure that people are warehoused. But the fact is the front end always works better because when you're helping people deal with their issues, then they can come out of that and they can be productive people in the community again. And I've known a lot of the folks in the RAP program that I consider friends because they are sort of living what we're talking about. They've dealt with their drug problems in a way that's effective. And I think programs like RAP are extremely effective in terms of using peers to talk to folks coming out of going into drug treatment because the peers have been there and they know what it's like. And so I see this as a time where we're going to address a lot of the problems the community is concerned about, but we're going to do it a lot smarter and a lot more humane in a way that by the investment at the front end, that we're going to reduce the investment at the back end. We won't need as many jails because we will have more treatment available, and it gets to the root cause of the problem. So, and that's community policing. So thank you, Commissioner Leonard, very much for your leadership in this, and the rest of the council, I really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing this implemented. I vote aye. Please read 1188.
Amend contract with Ariston Consulting and Technologies, Inc. to provide systems integration and implementation services for the Enterprise Business Solution Project.
Mayor Potter and commissioners, for the record, I'm Jennifer Sims, the city's chief financial officer and the project sponsor for the Enterprise Business Solution Project, EBS Project. The EBS project will replace the current aging financial system IBIS and shadow systems and will provide an integrated financial and human resources system, and business process improvements. This ordinance authorizes Amendment 2 to City Contract Number 37074 with Ariston Consulting and Technologies, Inc., to provide systems integration and implementation services for the project. The contract amendment for which we are requesting your approval includes project scope and implementation date changes based on the blueprint results of the project. The contract amendment cost for these changes is $3,153,044. Funds have been identified that will be requested in the fall bump. This contract amendment will cover costs through go live and provide additional contingency should it be needed for a successful implementation. We request your approval for completion of the EBS project, and I'd like to note that a representative from Ariston is here in case you have any questions for them. Thank you.
I visited on the 14th floor the operations up there and how you're transitioning. I was just really impressed, and I would hope that all the commissioners can get a chance to go take a look at that, because that is the future. The only disappointing thing is when I saw your computer training room, realizing that when this project is over, that goes away and the city will have no ability to train people on computers after that. I think that's a financial issue, and I want to support you folks in making sure that we always have a way to train our employees on the use of computers, because they're a part of our lives whether we like it or not. So thank you for that part. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter? Are there questions from the commissioners?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Would it be possible to get one more? This is an emergency vote, to get one more city commissioner back for a vote.
Any change in status in the overall project since you briefed me last?
No, we're still working with the same implementation date, January 24th, and we're on schedule at this time.
I think it's in the back.
Thank you. We do the second readings.
Ben.
There they are.
Good.
Ben, just come back.
This is please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Leonard? Potter?
Aye.
You just voted to rename the city.
Please read item 1189.
Accept bid of Tapani Underground, Inc. for the South Airport Sanitary Sewer System Phase 2A project for $653,394.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, Member of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is a recommendation to award this contract to Tapani Underground in the amount of $653,394. And just to break that out a little bit, we did identify eight different divisions of work for potential subcontract opportunities, and they were awarded in the amount of $126,000, of which a little over 14% were awarded to minority women and emerging small businesses. And they are in full compliance, or actually they're in delayed compliance with our equal benefit requirements to allow for them to catch up to their plan, and that will be taken into effect in February of 2008. So I'll answer any questions. We have a representative from BES here if there are any project-specific questions.
Questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay. I need a motion to accept the report and a second.
So moved. Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1190.
Adopt findings, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to the Bureau of Purchases pursuant to ORS 279 and City Code 5.34, and provide payment for construction of the Council Crest Park Tower Replacement Design Build Project.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1191.
Vacate portions of Northwest Quimby Street and Northwest Aspen Avenue subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Commissioner Adams.
Go ahead.
Hi, Linda Berth, Office of Transportation. I can do a brief presentation if you'd like about this street vacation, but I can also tell you that there's been no controversy and no issues have been raised.
I'll go for the latter.
I'd like a complete PowerPoint presentation.
Can we postpone that for next week then?
Any questions from the commissioners? Anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read the next item. Thank you.
1192, allow Portland Office of Transportation to administer the carpool program, including policy and pricing revisions.
Commissioner Adams.
Hi, I'm Jay Rogers, and I work for the Office of Transportation. The city contracted with TriMet to operate the carpool permit program. In September 2005, responsibility for that program was transferred back to the city. While PDOT assumed responsibility for administering the program, the program policies were never brought to council nor included in the city's policy document. If council adopts this ordinance, it would establish this program and allow for the inclusion of this program's administrative rules in the Portland's policy document. The ordinance recommended rule changes would improve management of this program and would authorize the creation of a carpool permit program advisory committee. This ordinance gives the PDOT director authority to authorize future carpool prices and policies. Thanks.
Thanks, Jay.
Questions from the commissioners? Anybody sign? Excuse me.
I have one question, I guess. So we're talking about the carpool parking
permits.
Yeah.
Correct. 600 a month.
600 a month.
Yeah, we issue 600 a month, 500 on street and 100 on smart park garages.
I guess I was just looking. I noticed that it's carpoolers must live outside of TriMet's Zone 1.
Right.
So has that always been the case? Or
it has.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions?
Isn't Zone 1 just downtown?
Zone 1, there's a map, and it goes from Fremont in northeast to Holgate and 31st. It's to encourage transit.
Out east, we call that downtown. So.
Pardon, what?
Out east, we call that downtown.
Nice save. Any other questions? Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
It's not an emergency. It moves to a second reading. Thank you. Item 1193 has been set over. Please read item 1194.
Vacate Southeast Kelton Street, west of Southeast 28th Avenue, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter.
Getting jumpy here.
Yeah, I am, aren't I? Read item 1195.
Adopt the update of transportation system development charge rate study, establish an updated fee schedule, and amend City Code 17.15 effective January 1, 2008.
Second reading, call the vote.
Were there some amendments to
there
this?
There is.
Where is she?
She's right here. Catherine, come on up.
Come on up. So we would like to make some amendments that would provide benefits that would fast track some of the changes in the pricing for this that would benefit certain businesses under construction right now to the tune of 12 to 30 some thousand dollars, and would like the council consideration of fast tracking some of these changes to the SDCs to allow for that benefit for these small businesses.
The ordinance before you has a proposed January 1st, 2008 application date of the new rate study, fee schedule, and code changes. And there are good reasons for that, including respecting statutory requirements and the like. But in one specific regard, there is a proposed change to how we charge small restaurants. And the amendments proposed in this memo would allow you to direct staff to implement those immediately.
Greg Jones with Office of Transportation. The one other addition to this is that this is not retroactive. It's only looking forward from this point on, so they're not trying to go back into a rebate situation with past businesses.
So do we have to amend this?
You do.
Do you have copies?
Excuse me?
Do you have copies of the proposed amendment?
We do. There was an October 2nd memo
that I
believe.
Your Tuesday memo yesterday?
Okay. Carla distributed.
I have extras. If anybody,
if it would be helpful to have a copy.
They've got them.
Okay. Those would be the two amendments that we would suggest you make, one of which creates or causes this to become an emergency ordinance.
I move the council consideration of the amendments contained in the aforesaid mentioned October 2nd memo.
Mentioned. Okay. Second, anybody?
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please call the vote on the entire package.
Adams?
Catherine, Greg, thank you very much for all your work on this. It's been absolutely fantastic. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Good work. Aye.
Thank you.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter?
It is good work. Thank you. Aye. Please read item 1196.
Authorized license agreement with Japanese Garden Society of Oregon to operate and manage the Japanese Garden in Washington Park.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Item 1197.
Accept a grant from the State Marine Board in the amount of $330,500 for repairing the existing tie-up facilities at River Place.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. We're adjourned until next week.
Hey, Sam.
Sam?
Who's the person who's going to be at the meeting tonight?
I think it's going to be Severo. They'll introduce themselves.
Okay, excellent.
What's that? I'll be dropping that resolution next week.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
The real power.